Okay, I think we'll go ahead and get started if you guys don't mind. So good evening and welcome to this House District 36 candidate forum. I'm Cindy Swett, KSDK's general manager, and I want to welcome candidates Sherry Klein and Dan Ortiz.
Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for coming to Wrangell so that we could participate in this question and answer. And we are broadcasting now live on KSTK, live from Assembly Chambers. I want to thank the City Hall staff for allowing us to use this facility. It's really nice to be able to include members of the public. So thank you so much. And also thanks to those members of the public for showing up and everybody listening. Thanks for tuning in. So just a couple of procedural things. We'll begin with opening comments from each candidate, and we'll allow 5 minutes for each opening comment, and we flipped a coin to decide. So Sherry will begin. She will go first. I'll keep track of time for 5 minutes. I'll give a 1 minute warning when we're down to 1 minute, and then a final warning when the 5 minutes is up. And then after both opening comments, we'll ask members of the public to come up to the podium. Ask your question. Please identify who you are. And I also have some questions. If we take care of everybody in the audience, I have some that were emailed to me that we could ask as well. And then we'll allow 5 minutes for closing comments. So we'll want to start that at about 20 after 6. So we wrap up by 6:30. So with that, let's go ahead and begin. So Sherry, if you would like to begin opening comments.
Well, I really appreciate everybody that's come out tonight and is listening online, online and on the radio. And thank you to KSTK and the city for hosting us tonight. Most of you know either myself or my husband, Lauren Enright, through our businesses here in Wrangell for about the past 20 years. We have Stikine Ready Mix and Critter Enterprises, where we get sand and gravel off the Stikine River. I also operate a consulting business where I help individuals and businesses and some state and federal agencies to work through the regulatory process in order to be able to develop their property or their projects. One of my first jobs in that consulting business was actually here in the city of Wrangell for the water treatment plant. I am pretty thoroughly connected to Wrangell and have been for over 20 years, not only through our businesses, but you guys often have my family up here, so I'm here quite frequently to visit them. As I've mentioned in previous debates and talks that we've had, I have worked in the private sector industries like most of us that have been here in Southeast for most of our lives. And that's what we've had to do in order to survive the ups and downs of our economy. Our family, just like many of you, have not had a guaranteed paycheck. Through my involvements and volunteering in many organizations, I have a pretty broad understanding of District 36. When my girls were young, I served on the Ketchikan Charter School Governing Board, and we've also been heavily involved in the youth court. I have been part of the Lions Club for about 20 years, where we do the 4th of July fireworks, the kitty parade, children's eye screening, and the bus shelters around Ketchikan. I have also served industry on the Forest Service's Resource Advisory Council, and I pride myself on being quite well-rounded and involved in many different parts of our community throughout the district. Our economy and the future economic development of our state and our communities depends on small businesses succeeding. And I intend to work to ensure that Alaska continues to have a friendly business climate for those of us that are already here as business people and to encourage new business. It is essential that we continue to grow our economy, and not only for the jobs that it provides, but in order to have a healthy and productive community that where our children, our grandchildren, the seniors, and our visitors can prosper. We do have dwindling revenues in our state, and our expenditures will need to be cut during the next session. Having been in business for over 25 years, I understand budgets and the ripple effect of those cuts. The last 2 years working for Peggy in Juneau has taught me how the legislative process really works and what is necessary in Juneau in order to represent our district. I have worked to help move legislation forward, and I've closely watched and understand the internal workings, including the necessary negotiations and collaboration that it takes to be effective in Juneau. Knowing when to compromise or push back is essential, and understanding when to leverage a smaller project for something that is more important to the region is essential. Having the relationships in the building is critical for all of us in Southeast. My foundation and beliefs are mostly conservative and generally in line with the Republican Party. Southeast Alaska deserves someone who will stand firm in their beliefs and will be a member of the majority and will actually be able to accomplish something while in Juneau. Rather than independent that is one voice out of 40, I will be a part of the majority that has typically included around 27 members. I thank you again for taking the time to be here tonight.
Okay, thank you. Dan, would you like to begin your opening comments?
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Dan Ortiz, and I'm a nonpartisan candidate for the Alaska State House of Representatives, District 36. Thank you, Wrangell residents, for attending this forum today, and thanks to KSTK and the City of Wrangell for hosting the event. I would like to start today by introducing to you my wife, Lori Ortiz, who is here. And Lori, you know, she is my better half. There's just no doubt about it. I've been fortunate to be married to her for 29 years, and we've been blessed by God with three fine children, Molly, who's 24, Lucy, who's 21, and Sam, who's 18. I also have worked in private industry. I have worked for Ketchikan Pulp Company, paid my way through school. I worked there for 4 or 5 summers. I have worked on my dad's commercial fishing boat. I've also worked in various summer jobs working for private industry, most notably in the tourist industry. I also understand how the economy works and have a firm grasp on our own Southeast region economy. I'm running for the Alaska State House because I believe in the United States and the Alaska State Constitution. I still believe in the basic tenet of government by the people and for the people. A vote for Dan Ortiz is a vote for putting all the citizens of Wrangell and the rest of District 36 first before any special interests or partisan political politics. My life has been blessed because I've grown up and lived in southern Southeast Alaska for 45 years. I am a homegrown Alaskan. If I'm fortunate enough to be elected to District 36, to be District 36 representative, I will work tirelessly for the interest of the community of Wrangell. Specifically, my platform includes pushing for Phase 2 funding of the Wrangell Marine Service Center and associated harbor property for business and job opportunities. Push for legislative appropriation to assist Wrangell Hospital and the nursing home replacement project. Give strong support for the fishing industry, particularly by championing opportunities for further development of the mariculture industry. And to refocus the Alaska legislature on the importance of the Alaska Marine Highway as essential to our Southeast infrastructure. It's critical to our economy that we get a refocus on that marine highway system. In all likelihood, the stances you hear from me will not exactly reflect all of your own, because you are not walking in my shoes, nor are you this day asking for the permission to represent the diverse interests of an entire legislative district. I can only promise you that I will sit down and listen to folks like you, the people of Southern Southeast. Just as I did for over 3 decades of teaching and coaching, you can count on me to do my homework on every topic. I will be responsive and available to all individuals in my district. I have a lot to learn from my constituents, but I come to the table open and prepared, and then I am not prepared. I am not afraid to speak my mind. The key is to work intelligently, rationally, and creatively to reach compromises people can live with. Again, I'm a nonpartisan, a good listener, and a strong voice. That is why I am the best candidate to represent District 36 and why I'm asking for your vote on November 4th. Thank you.
Okay, thanks to both of the candidates. We'd like to open it up now to questions from the audience. If anyone would like to please come on up to the podium.
Do I come there?
Yeah, please. And by yourself.
Dick Decker. I've been a commercial fisherman for 41 years, and the biggest threat I've ever experienced in 41 years is right here in Wrangell, and it's the mines that are going on up the river. There's hundreds of permits, and because it's, you know, I'm not worried about American mines because I think that we have a pretty good system of, you know, overseeing this, and at least here in Southeast, but I'm really concerned about what's going on up there with the Canadian mines, and I would like both of your opinions about what we can do to make sure that, you know, we don't end up losing our fisheries. And, you know, I'm not interested in any kind of, you know, sometimes they have funds or something to make up for your losses. There is no loss to a lifestyle I spent all my life at. So
that's a good question.
Yeah.
Cool.
Am I first?
Well, I certainly support what the administration has done so far in requesting a review panel on the KSM is one of the ones I assume you're referring to. And I don't think, you know, there's been so much lately that's happened with the dam failure and so much news that is going on with that. And we don't know yet all the failures that went forth or what exactly caused it. But I do think that we need to get more good, sound information for the decisions and be realistic on what we can and can't expect on the expectations with another country. I think it's extremely important that we enforce the transboundary pact that's been in place since 1909 and make sure that our administration and what we can do in the legislature to make sure that is happening. Of course, we have to remember it is another country. We can do everything possible on our side to ask and ask for more commission, ask for more panel and be on those panels, but we do have to remember again that it is another country and they do have their own procedures that we are lucky enough to be included in but not always follow what we do.
This is a big issue for all of us here in Southern Southeast Alaska and for the entire Southeast region. It's one where, you know, it's been highlighted with the Mount Polly disaster that took place this summer and potentially, you know, endangering 150 million sockeye salmon in that river system alone. It's a big issue. But it's also an international issue and one that I'm not going to sit here and say, well, yeah, as me as your state representative, I'll take care of that issue. Obviously, this is an issue for our legislative delegation. Each of the members of that delegation has asked for a panel review for the Canadians to go through a thorough panel review of their procedures. That's very, you know, that's solid. I think our administration at the Alaska level could pick a little bit more of an active role in also pushing for the Canadians to do what they can to communicate with us and to let us know as to what their specific plans are and the development of those other mines and how those other mines will be hopefully foolproof and not endanger those salmon runs. I agree, you know, it's another country and it's, you know, we are only able to do and to have input where the Canadians give us that input and they are sovereign. But hopefully the interests of the Canadian fishermen as well, along with other people who are concerned about the mining activities on the Canadian side, will collaborate with our Alaskan delegation to do what we absolutely can, the most we can do to try to promote safety and future development of those mines.
Thank you so much. Is there another question in the audience?
My name is Bruce Eagle, and I'm retired. Not just tired, I am retired. I was a commercial fisherman for 40 years, so I've been in my own business for 40 years. What I would like tonight is to look at oil revenues. And as you know, the price of oil is dropping rapidly. And the Saudis are not doing what they have normally done in the past, which is step in, reduce production, to put a floor under the oil price. So So the state is going to be looking at severely restricted amount of money coming from the oil industry. That means we're going to have to think about what we're going to do in state government to slow down our expenditures. And that takes two things: cutting programs and looking for new sources of revenue. So I would like each of you to give me two areas where you would cut costs in the state government and two areas where you would look to new revenues. And these need to be measurable. Thank you.
Okay, and Dan, would you like to go first on this one, please?
This is the biggest issue that's going to be facing whoever represents us in our Alaska State Legislature. Declining revenues is a significant problem. It is the main problem that this legislature will face. Two things that I think we can look at in terms of how we might save state money. First of all, in our capital projects budget, there are some significant big projects that are on tap for Alaska State support. And in good times, I'm sure they would all be good projects for us to pursue. But specifically, the Susitna Dam project, the Nick Arm Bridge project, those are huge projects with major Alaskan, that call for a lot of Alaskan dollars investment. I don't think we can do all of the projects. So it's going to take a bipartisan, cooperative effort on the part of the administration and the legislature to prioritize what projects we essentially need or absolutely have to have, and focus in on those, and then on those other projects say, okay, yeah, they'd be nice and they would be job creators, but we just don't have the money. So capital projects would be my first area to look at. Secondly, in our operations budget, finding efficiencies, there's still some things that we can do. If we look at the model provided by the Department of Motor Vehicles and the changes that they've made over the last several years, they've been cost-saving measures and, I believe, helped the Department of Motor Vehicles provide better services. And the Department of Motor Vehicles is one department we can look at as a model, because they have created, they're self-sustaining and created enough revenues to pay for themselves and to even have a surplus. So if we can look at what they've done in that particular department and say, well, obviously not all of those changes could be applied to all the departments, to look at what's been done there and say, what can we do, what can we apply to other areas of our departments to help save some money, to become more efficient. So those would be two specific things. And then the revenue side. That one is a tough one. I don't think with the recent deficit budgets that we've had where we've gone into our savings, we've been able to, you know, to cover expenditures. And our people, our state, hasn't really felt the effects of cuts yet. So I don't think that they are going to be amenable to many ideas about revenue enhancements, i.e., capping the permanent fund. It would be one idea, and it would be probably a pretty cost-efficient idea in terms of, if you cap the revenue on the permanent fund dividend, you could take all that money and not have to create a new agency and just put that into those budgets. But I don't think we're there yet. I think that that's a regressive thing to do. It affects people who are lower poverty or lower income people more than the wealthier, and I just don't think that the state is ready for that. I'm not ready to vote for that. And then, of course, you have taxes. And again, until we make some cuts, until the Alaska public feels those cuts, I just don't think that they're in the mood for any tax increases. So to answer the question specifically, I think we have to do some hard prioritizing, and we have to cut the operating budget to some levels where we can find more efficiencies, and we also must look at the capital budget, and then when those cuts are made, find out whether the state of Alaska is open to some revenue enhancements.
Well, one area that I would like to see the budget cut immediately is a water primacy plan that we've just recently looked at taking over. And I think we're not ready to do that. We don't have the economy, the funds to do that any longer. So I would certainly take that right back off the burner. We're looking into it right now, but that is definitely something we don't have to do. The Corps of Engineers and the EPA are doing a fine job of it. We had hoped to take it over, but it's certainly something that we don't can't afford right now. And then, you know, you really can't look at our budget and say, I'm going to take either in the operating or in the capital. You can't say I'm going to take out, other than that program that I mentioned, because it's something that was just instituted last session. Most of the things are interconnected, and we have a tremendous amount of federal funding that feeds through almost all the programs that we have. In our capital budget, which is a pretty small number in comparison to our overall budget, 60% of that is federally funded. So if we say we want to knock off the Connect Arm Barge Bridge, which is actually a private partnership with the government, well, we not only lose that private now, but we've also lose the federal fundings that are feeding that and that we're able to have loosened up to use on some of our other DOT projects. So we certainly have to look line by line through all the different divisions, but we have to be very careful when we're doing that because there are so many things that are intertied with the federal monies, and not only just in one department, but they're intertied across several departments. And then as far as our increase in our revenues, well, number one is the LNG, which was passed this last session. I mean, that's going to be huge for our state. And so that, to me, is our number one area that we can increase our revenues. And then everything as far as developing our resources. We are a resource-rich state, so we have to continue to develop our resources and, of course, do them in an environmentally sound manner. But that's what we're made of. So. And looking at what we can do in the global market, we really are connected into the global market quite a lot already, but we need to be looking at it further. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have another question from anyone in the audience? Mr. Presenta?
Hi there. I'm Steve Presenta, and my question is regarding Medicaid expansion. There's about 50,000 Alaskans that do not have health care. They fall into that sort of donut hole from the Affordable Care Act. As a family who is benefiting from the Affordable Care Act, my wife had the audacity to go and get cancer 4 years ago and became uninsurable completely after that. And so we have directly benefited from it. So I feel that we need to find out what your positions are on Medicaid expansion, number one. And number two, if you can highlight, if you've had an opportunity to read the report that was commissioned by our governor, that came out after he made the announcement that he wouldn't do the expansion, that clearly states that it's funded through perpetuity and that we wouldn't be losing any money from doing the Medicaid expansion, how we can justify not bringing these people under the fold of having health care. Thank you.
Okay, Sherry, would you like to take that one first?
Certainly. At this time, I have not, and I support the administration in not expanding Medicare because I believe it does have to be sustainable for our sustainable. I don't think that we should just grab it into our fold. We aren't in a position right now to institute new programs that we can't pay for once the federal funds do stop, and that will stop in 3 years. The federal funds portion of that will stop, and we have to make sure as a state that we can sustain that program if we're going to bring those people in and they're going to expect those services, that we can then sustain it. The state chamber supports the Medicaid expansion, but they do support it with a caveat that it is funded and that we continue to receive that federal match. So if we're not going to be receiving that federal match, that support goes away. Right now, there are only 27 of our 50 states that have expanded Medicare. And I think that it's very important that we do understand all the ramifications and make sure that it is something we can sustain as a state before we accept. And, you know, about, I think it was 2 weeks ago that Congressman Young went through, and he's talked about Alaska being more careful about accepting the federal dollars, because there's so many strings attached to them that we don't often understand until after we've accepted it. So at this point, until I think we prove that we can sustain it, I haven't been supporting it.
I fully support the expansion of Medicaid in the state of Alaska. Two different studies, nonpartisan studies, have come out and said that it will save the state of Alaska money we need to save where we can. The Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce have both come out and said this is something that we should do. They're in support of it. The 50,000 Alaskans who don't have health care, that costs the state money. Right now, the state picks up 30% of their potential costs. So it's not a matter of not spending money. We are going to spend money. The question is, what can we do to get people health care? And if we can do it through Medicaid expansion, which the medical community fully supports, we get the people that needed health care, it saves the state money, it just makes good sense. And so, yes, I'm in full support of it, and I believe that it's the fiscally correct thing for our state to do, is to accept that Medicaid expansion.
Okay. Very good. Do we have another question? With lots of folks in the audience. Anybody? Julie? Okay.
Julie Decker, and I usually speak about seafood issues, but I serve on the Wrangell Assembly, and so we have to deal with multiple issues. Something that's come up recently that somewhat affects our district is the bighorn timber sale on Prince of Wales Island. The timber industry has been in decline for at least 20 years, and it's pretty important to District 36. I was curious what your thoughts were. Is there any way to turn that industry back around? It's to the point where I think it's really in risk of going away in many ways. So just your thoughts about that and what you could do as a representative.
Okay. I think there are some things we can do, and I fully support opportunities for the timber industry to reignite itself. I think it's an important potential economic opportunity for our region that, you know, that we need to pursue. Specifically, I think that if we can find ways for the state to assist in opening up access to mental health and to university lands, like for example on the Revilla Gigedo Island, if we can promote the Shelter Cove Road tie-in, that would give us access to mental health lands, university lands, and allow timber companies to get access to those and to be able to harvest some timber during this time when we're shifting to the second growth timber program that the U.S. Forest Service is directing us to do. So it's important. It's a key part of our economy, and I will do what I can to get the state to do what it can to facilitate economic opportunity in the timber industry.
Well, I absolutely support the timber industry. It was something my father started in and has supported my family off and on through the years. I think one thing that went through this last session, House Bill 47, sponsored by Representative Feige out of Chickaloon, was passed that should hopefully in the near future and in the coming forward to the timber industry by reducing some of the number of frivolous lawsuits that can happen. It requires a bond to cover shutdowns and the startup costs for operations if a lawsuit is instigated against. It's more of an it's towards industrial type operations, which timber should fall under. And I'm hopeful that small steps like this will slowly start to make a difference, and we will get our timber industry back. It's never going to be like it was when I was growing up, but we can certainly hopefully have an industry that can sustain the jobs such as they're doing over in Kluwak right now. I think the Forest Service's move that they're trying to move towards harvesting young growth is certainly not the way that we need to go. We need to continue to be harvesting our old growth so that we, and getting the board footage that we're supposed to be getting, which we're not getting anywhere close to, And with the large growth timber, we have much higher value product. The young growth is not only, is it again, back at real small volume, but it doesn't have the value that we get in the long, in the large growth timber. So we need to do that. And anything that we can bring forward in, like I said, small steps that will enhance the timber industry, I think we can continue to have a viable industry if we can keep pushing back.
Very good. Another question from our audience? We've talked about mining, fishery, oil revenue, Medicaid expansion, timber, all of these Alaska topics, Southeast topics. Anybody else want to chime in? I have a few email questions we can read, but I'd like to make sure everyone in the audience has had an opportunity.
Peggy Wilson. Typically a minority person that goes and gets into the majority caucus has to ask to join the caucus, and then the caucus actually votes on whether that person can be allowed into the caucus or not. So having said that, I want to add one point here. Never, ever has there anyone allowed to be go into the majority caucus that has run against a Republican. Now that's not to say that it wouldn't maybe somehow happen again, or happen, but it never has so far. And I'm just wondering, how do you propose to be effective if you don't have a sway of at least a majority to go with you to do that?
So it's a question for me.
So I was just going to say, I'm assuming this is a question for
question
Mr.
for
Ortiz.
Both of you.
Okay.
Okay.
I have been assured by people on both sides of the aisle that if I win on election night, I will be called and invited into the caucus, the majority and minority. And I have pledged publicly to join the caucus that's in the best interest of our region and our district, which most likely will be the majority. I have no question that I will have that opportunity to do so. They have currently, in this last session, two Democrats who were serving in the majority. And I would imagine that they probably ran against a Republican. Never. Well, okay. In any case, I think that that is not going to be an issue. I believe I will have the opportunity. I have been assured that I will have the opportunity. And so I'm not worried about that. I think I will be able to serve our district very well in the best interests of the district, which probably will be a part of the majority.
Well, I've spoken with the Speaker of the House and the leadership in the majority, and of course, since I'm a Republican, I am part of it automatically. I also have been told by the leadership in the House that there has not been someone from the minority invited in if they've run against a Republican, and all the Democrats that are in there are from rural Alaska, and they don't have opponents that are in the Republican Party. So I don't think that I have an issue. I know that I'm part of that body, and so that I would be voting with the majority.
Did you have another question?
Yeah,
let's go ahead since nobody else was standing up.
And the next question is, and this is for Dan. When you made comments that when people asked you questions, you made comments that you were going to be very very strong on cutting back and making sure that we cut where we can. But every time a question was asked about if you were going to include something in a program, you always made the comment that that you would increase the program. And I'm just wondering where you think the money is going to be coming from to increase Medicare, to increase money to for funding, like the timber industry, to pay for some of these things.
Well, can you be specific? But I mean, on the Medicaid expansion, several studies have said that it would save the state money. Several studies have said that. So that's going to save the state money, not cost the state money. And then I guess I would have to ask where you have quoted me as saying that I am for the expansion of, quote, these other programs. Can you be specific?
Well, when they talked about the timber industry, mm-hmm. and you were saying that we need to make sure that we can help the timber industry by funding them so that they could do more.
Well, I believe that you and I are both are probably in agreement that the proper role of state is to facilitate infrastructure and both transportation and energy infrastructure. And I believe that in your last session, you were encouraged to support hydroelectric power with state enhancements. Is that correct?
At times.
Yeah, okay. And so while I agree that the appropriations or the capital budget, we need to do some prioritizing, it would be my goal as a legislator to prioritize projects that will assist infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, power infrastructure in our region, something that you work for and something that I'll work very hard for.
Thank you very much. That does not decrease funding. That increases funding.
Thank you very much. Mr. Eagle.
Yeah. Bruce Eagle again. I didn't realize we were going to get two questions.
Yeah.
How many can I have?
Well, I wanted to go through everyone once, and then nobody stood up or raised their hand, so I let Peggy ask a second question. So now we're...
Am I good to go for my second one, or should I say?
How many folks still want to ask questions? We have a raise.
Thank you for not making me walk
raise hands. Okay, it looks like we have time for a couple more questions. I have four here, but two of them have already been fairly well addressed. So do you have two?
This will be very quick.
Okay.
One question.
Okay.
The state has a tremendous amount of unfunded liability. What would you do to help mitigate this in our retirement system, according to the bonding experts that I look at?
Okay, and
that's it.
Okay, and so Sherry Klein, would you like to respond first?
Absolutely.
Please?
Well, it is in the scheduled budget every year. I believe we're up to about 800,000. The $3 billion that was put in this last year was to bring that sum down so that it was manageable for about the next 8 to 10 years, according to the revenues forecast and the finance department at that time, that we could afford to make those payments versus what we were going to be need to make if we hadn't had those large sum put into it.
Van Ortiz?
I fully supported the governor's decision to put the $3 million into those two retirement systems. It's a constitutional mandate. Nobody argued about that. And it did require us to tap into our reserve accounts. But that in the end is going to save the state money in the long run. And I think that in the next legislative session, if the governor and the legislature concurs that it would be prudent for us to further buy down those liabilities by using the reserves to save us money in the long run, I would be in support of that.
Okay, thank you. We have a couple more members in the audience. We are open to the public asking questions. Would you or anyone else in the audience care to ask another question?
Well, I guess...
I'm sorry. Could you please come up to the podium and state your name?
We're
broadcasting on the radio, and it's nicer if we can get you up to the microphone. So thank you so much.
My name is Mark Mitchell, and my question is, what do you have proposed to reduce the budget and control the spending? And then after you get through...
Go ahead, Mr. Ortiz.
In the appropriation side, one of the things I didn't mention in the last answer to this question, I believe that in the university side of education funding, there's still some efficiencies that can be found there. And I believe that in creating those efficiencies, saving the state money, that would allow us to come up with some significant cost reductions, or cost savings, I should say. I'll leave it at that for right now.
Okay. Well, before you had come in, we did talk a little bit about that, and the one thing that I said I would like to see reduced is the water primacy program that we just instituted, researching that. I think we have a 5-year plan, might have been 8-year plan. Some pretty significant funds going into that, so I think we could just stop looking into taking those over from the Corps and EPA and let that be. I personally think we need to go line by line through every department and determine where there are cost efficiencies. Make sure that the budgets that we do have appear to be sustainable in those departments, and if not, and there needs to be work there, don't put it off for another session and work on it this next session. I think we also need to look back the last 10 years at all the new programs that we have implemented, see if there's some of those that we truly aren't using necessarily, or that are not, we're using them, but that may not be doing what we expected them to do, and perhaps have another program that's very similar that we could integrate them with. And then also some of the ones that we implemented simply because we were getting federal funding but are no longer getting federally funded. I think we also need to look at those and see if it's something that we still truly need.
Okay, very good. Anybody else before we go to the email questions? Okay, great. Thank you for standing up and asking your questions. We appreciate that. So this is an email. This comes from Keith Appleman in Wrangell, and I'll just read exactly what he wrote. As you know, State Ballot Measure Number 3 is an act to increase Alaska's minimum wage. For a bit of history, Alaska had the highest minimum wage in the nation for the first 4 decades after statehood to help compensate for the high cost of living within the state. Today, Alaska has the 19th highest minimum wage in the nation. Over 75% of Alaskan workers earning minimum wage are adults. And then he has separate questions, roughly the same for Sherry. At Southeast Conference Candidate Forum in Wrangell last month, you stated publicly that you oppose this ballot initiative and will be voting against it in the general election. Please elaborate why you are taking this position. And then for Dan, at this same Candidate Forum in Wrangell, you voiced your support for this ballot initiative and stated you will support it. Please give your reasons why you support raising the minimum wage. So I think it's Sherry's turn to go first.
It is, and I said then I would, and I will continue to say that I will vote no personally on this initiative. As a business person, I dislike government being involved any more than we have to, and I don't think that the government should be telling us what we have to pay and when we should raise our employees' pay rate, whether they deserve it or not. The minimum wage that we have is a base rate. If we didn't have that, there certainly would be some business people that may be paying $2 or $3 an hour. So I certainly think that we do need to have that bottom range. The way the initiative is written, it does not offer any type of flexibility for possible fringe benefits that businesses offer. And especially when it's a small business, those health insurance costs and those retirement plans that they offer can be huge benefits that may make the difference when it's a minimum wage. And then I don't think anyone would doubt that when we raise the cost in a business, that that certainly gets passed right on to the consumer. So if we've raised the rate to our minimum wage worker, we're now charging them more for the products that they need in order to live. And in the same line, they may now be in a higher tax bracket. And so supposedly they're making more money, but they're actually paying more for what they paying more in taxes and paying more for what they have to purchase. And so in the end result, they're actually making more than they were before the minimum wage was brought forth. And I think it also affects a couple of our industries within the state pretty tremendously, the ones that are involved in the global market. And that would be our fish processing facilities. They are trying to compete with places where they're definitely are not paying the minimum wage that we do in the United States. And so that is very difficult for them to compete on the global market. And lastly, there are no provisions in the initiative for hotel cabaret type businesses where tips are a huge part of their wages as well. So that's my reasoning behind it. Thank you.
I will vote in support of raising the minimum wage. It makes good economic sense. Right now, a person who earns a minimum wage likely will qualify for state aid and for other programs, assistance programs, that costs either the federal government or the state money. If we raise the minimum wage, less likelihood that they will fall into those categories, and thereby less likely to be drawing on those social programs. The money that they make likely will be spent in the economy and cause economic expansion because of increased expenditures in the economy. It makes good economic sense. I believe Governor Parnell, as well as Senate candidate Sullivan, have both now come out in support of raising the minimum wage, and I'm in full support of it as well.
Okay, thank you. I have another email question. This is from Maria Byford. She has two. One regards the mining development and fisheries, which Gig already asked, and we've heard a response from. So I'll start with her first question. Where does the Alaska Marine Highway stand in your list of priorities? And what is your vision of its funding and method of operation in coming years? And Dan Ortiz, it's your turn to go first.
The Alaska Marine Highway System, from the very beginning of my candidacy, has been one of my main areas that I would like to see our state refocus on. I do support the cost-saving measures that have been made by the ferry system. I believe they've closed the gift shops, which have cost the state a lot of money. I think $1 million a year, and didn't bring in that much revenue. So it is both a cost-saving, looking for ways to save costs in the Alaska Marine Highway System, but also we do need to look for transportation dollars to go towards our key transportation infrastructure. For the last several years, we have seen cuts for the Alaska Marine Highway System to the point now where they've cut services. And when you do that, when I say services, they've cut schedules. The schedules have been reduced. And that hurts our economy. It hurts the economy of the interior part of the state as well. There are lots of people who travel on that Alaska Marine Highway System who get off in Haines and head up into Anchorage and Fairbanks. So it's an economic issue, and it's one where the rail belt legislators are more than happy to seem to want to ignore investments by the state. They'd like to see that money go towards, you know, the rail belt. But I'm going to work real hard and bipartisan way to try to recreate a rural coalition to stand up to that rail belt. Yes, our representative has been part of the majority, but that majority has been dominated by the rail belt, and they've been more than happy to ignore the needs, particularly in the transportation area of our region down here in Southeast Alaska. And I think that my candidacy offers a great opportunity for us to work in a bipartisan way with our Democratic representatives in that we have here in Southeast Alaska, as well as our Republican representatives, as well as the rest of the rural part of Alaska, to see if we can create a rural coalition to stand up to that rail belt. And the Alaska Marine Highway would be one area where we could see a benefit from that. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I would note that there is the Bush Caucus, which is made up of all the rural legislators and includes those of us in Southeast. And that is going, has been going for a long time and will continue to go, and I will be part of the Bush Caucus. And one of their main focuses is the Marine Highway and continuing the service and making sure that it does everything we need in Southeast, because it is our road. It's the legislators up north don't particularly understand that. And we've been working on that for over 20, 25 years to try to get them to understand that that's our road, and they don't. So I don't have a lot of hopes that even with one more person in the legislature that they're all going to suddenly see that that's our highway. But we certainly, I understand it's extremely important. We use it on a regular basis in all of our businesses. And I think one of the things that has been starting to change, or that we've been working on the last few years and has brought in a lot of money into our districts throughout probably the last 10 years, are the road interconnections, which have been ongoing in Prince of Wales and trying to get going in Juneau to try to cut down on some of those ferries. Because originally when the ferry system was started, I think it was back in 1962, the plan was never for it to always be boats. It was to have interconnected roads throughout all of Southeast. And we've just never, I guess, went to that. We never quite got that fully implemented, and we are starting to do that now. I think some of the things that they're starting to do with the day boats, I mean, we're going to have to be open to new ideas. It's not what we've been used to the last 20, 30 years, but we have to keep open to new ideas to how we can make those efficiencies, because our Alaska Marine Highway system has gone from a $69 million budget up to, I think it's $172 million now this last year. It's a huge increase, and, that's a largely is supplemented by the state of Alaska. And we always come back to, well, no other road has to be pay for itself, but we do still have to be realistic and understand that that's how the other legislators look at it, so we're going to have to fight for those monies. I think we just need to be open to changes and make sure that the MTAB and DOT are working together, and they are looking out 20 years, and they do seem to do a pretty decent job, I think, so far. So I think the main thing is being willing to look at new ideas with our system.
Okay, thank you so much. I know it's going with closing comments, this asking this last question is going to push us over a little bit, but if everybody's okay with that for time. Okay, so this will kind of come full circle, and we did start the questions. Gig was asking questions about mining and the effect on fisheries. I have an email question from Stephen Todd, a 14-year resident of Wrangell, and he has a couple of specifics in here that were not discussed, so I'm going to go ahead and ask again on this topic. So here is Stephen's comment and question. Canadian mines in the Stikeen watershed, such as the Red Chris mine, and in the Unik watershed, such as the KSM mine, are in the process of developing and planning earthen dams to hold water reservoirs that will cover toxic tailings. As a state legislator, would you support protecting clean water and our fishery resource by increasing funding for water quality monitoring in our transboundary rivers? And do you support efforts and discussions in cooperation with the U.S. State Department that could result in holding these mining corporations and the Canadian government accountable for negative effects on our clean water and fisheries resources on rivers like the Stikeen? And it is Sherry's turn to go first on this one.
Well, I do know that we are and have been on the waters. I can't even think of what I'm trying to say at the moment. We have been monitoring the waters on those rivers. It was an issue I dealt with several constituents this last session. And so we have been doing that monitoring. I don't think it's something that we have to increase the budget on in order to continue. And then as far as supporting sanctions, is that what we were looking at towards the State Department? Bonding, I'm sorry.
Efforts and discussions in cooperation with the U.S. State Department that would result in holding the mining corporations and Canadian governments accountable?
If it's something that is covered in our pact that we're able to do without causing, I think, an international incident, I would certainly support that.
Okay.
It is important that we're monitoring those river systems, that we have the baseline data so that we know if changes are happening, that we're aware of those. If that baseline data is already intact, and I can't tell you that it is or it isn't, then so be it. We wouldn't need to expend more monies to have those done. However, if they're not, we do need to make sure that we have the baseline data so that we can monitor changes that happen to those river systems if, in fact, they happen. And yes, I would fully support the current process that's happening at the State Department level, along with our legislative delegation, in asking for a seat at the table to make sure that we are fully aware of the practices and the things that are happening on the Canadian side. And granted, it is something that they are allowing us to do, and you know, we need to, of course, express our appreciation for that. But we certainly encourage that, and so yes, I'm in support of that.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we will go to closing comments, 5 minutes each, or up to 5 minutes each, and we will start with Dan Ortiz.
Thank you. My candidacy for the Alaska State House of Representatives offers a chance for a new beginning. It offers a chance to reduce party partisan politics, to work, to have a legislator that will work across party lines, to work to not worry about the interests of the Republicans or the interests of the Democrats, but to just promote the interests of Southern Southeast Alaska, Southeast Alaska, and the state as a whole. It's a chance for a change. And I believe that I will work well and be diligent in doing a good job of representing the interests of our entire region. And it's an opportunity that I would relish. I have been blessed by living in Southern Southeast Alaska, and it would be an honor and a privilege to be able to be their representative in the Alaska State Legislature. So again, I'm asking the residents of District 36 for their vote, and I will merit their trust if I do receive that vote. Thank you.
Thank you again for having us all here tonight and be willing to give up your evening. I'd like to remind everyone that I have a unique and a diverse work background that has given me a variety of experiences in understanding our communities throughout the entire district. My family and I have owned and operated businesses throughout the district, and I have a vested interest in this community. It is important to have someone with broad knowledge to understand not only the myriad of issues that come before the legislature, but how the decisions affect our communities. As a business person and an individual, I am directly affected by the economy, just as you are. I want to see all of our Southeast economy blossom, and I think I have the background and the real-life experience to help lead that charge. I realize the tremendous opportunities that we have in our natural resources development to enhance the economy, not only in the state, but also in our towns. Fishing and timber, mining, development of the Arctic, the LNG and the oil that we have, tourism, I pledge to support all these drivers and realize how important these decisions that are made at the legislative level are. These decisions have long-reaching effects, and it is important for someone to have someone with a broad background that can understand the issues. I know and have worked in the legislative process in Juneau. I have those firsthand relationships with both the legislators and their staff. I know the necessary collaboration and the negotiation that is needed to actually be effective. The legislature does work across party lines, so I don't see that that's going to change. And there is no substitute for having the knowledge of being in Juneau. And I think our district deserves to have someone that is guaranteed to be in the majority caucus. I am guaranteed to be a member, and it is essential for Southeast in order to get anything done. Thank you, and please remember to vote on November 4th.
Okay, thank you very much. So that concludes our House District Candidate Forum, live from City Hall, and we want to thank again the candidates, Dan Ortiz and Sherry Klein, for coming to Wrangell, and for the listeners in the radio audience, we'll send it back to Asia Fisher at KSTK.
Thank you.